You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Robert Lee.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as Davis Love leads the USA to victory in the 41st Ryder Cup.
We've been criticized for 8 or 10 years for not coming together. And everybody that played on the team or didn't play on the team showed that we had a lot of heart and we can pull together. And I'm just super proud of them. And for everybody that's ever been a part of the Ryder Cup, we all pulled together for this one.
The USA beat Europe 17 points to 11 in Hazeltine, but for European captain Darren Clarke, there was no shame in defeats against the dominant Americans.
The players give me everything. I couldn't have asked for 1 ounce more. Unfortunately, we're going back home without the trophy, but we will be fighting hard for it again in Paris in 2 years' time.
So a full review of a scintillating Ryder Cup is on the way, and we'll hear more from Davis Love and Darren Clarke alongside Jordan Spieth, Patrick Reed, Thomas Peters and Rory McIlroy. Plus, we look ahead to this week's Alfred Dunhill Links Championship and Fiji International. Lots to come, so stay with us. Hello, I'm Dan Roebuck, and I'm joined on the show by former European Tour player Robert Lee. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Dan. Crestfallen.
And from across the pond, we're joined by legendary golf broadcaster Bob Bobka. Bob, you must be crowing this morning. Terrific performance from the Americans.
Well, I've waited a long time to be able to get to this mood. Last time I did it was 8 years ago. I was beginning to wonder whether I would ever do it again in my lifetime, but yes, I am thrilled to death that we finally broke through, and it was an incredible Ryder Cup. You know, the amazing thing, and there were certainly a lot of amazing things that transpired, but that opening match on Sunday singles between Patrick Reed and Rory McIlroy, you got the feeling early on after a couple of holes that, wait a minute, we're watching a heavyweight fight here. Back and forth they went. The drama was incredible, and it was well assumed that for Europe to win the Ryder Cup, certainly Rory McIlroy has to win his first match. And boy, if you're Darren Clarke, you got to be feeling good that it's Rory McIlroy, because he certainly has established himself right now as the best player in the world. And how Patrick Reed pulled that off is just one amazing feat.
Do you know, I'd like to go back to the shock of the first morning foursomes, to be honest. 4-0 sweep to the Americans, which hadn't been done since Arnold Palmer, bizarrely enough, was captaining the American side. So that really got me going. No one could see that. A clean sweep for the Americans, 4-0 up going into the afternoon four balls on Friday. I thought that was shocking. And then for us to come back 3-1 and get a bit back and get back into it, as we kept pegging them back, I did actually think at some point before we got to the singles, and really, Bob, before the afternoon four balls on Saturday, do you know what, we could make it happen again?
4-0 in favor of the United States. The mountain for the European team to climb was extremely high. And then just little things didn't go Europe's way. And one highlight, and I still feel bad for him. I talked to him after the Ryder Cup. I talked to Chubby Chandler's manager. But Lee Westwood, a captain's pick on Saturday afternoon, very rarely as a Ryder Cup player do you ever get yourself in a position to extremely justify a pick made by the captain coming down the stretch, match hanging in the balance. Lee Westwood hits a magnificent drive on 18, then steps up, hits that approach inside of 3 feet. And I'm saying, wow, he has a gift-wrapped opportunity right now to say and show that Darren Clarke made the right move in picking Lee Westwood. Lo and behold, he misses that little short putt, which was a sad, sad thing to witness. Lee being one of the nicest guys out there, and I've known him a long, long time. Obviously, Lee was crushed. I was crushed. And I believe the European side really was crushed on Saturday afternoon.
Of course, it was the USA that defeated Europe 4-0 on the Friday morning. Spieth and Reed getting the better of Rose and Stenson 3-2. Mickelson and Fowler beating McIlroy and Sullivan 1-up. Walker and Zach Johnson beating Garcia and Kiemer 4-2. And Dustin Johnson and Matt Kuchar getting the better of Thomas Peters and Lee Westwood 5-4. Rob, when we look back at that morning play, do you think that Darren Clark got the pairings wrong? Was it nerves on the European part, or were the Americans just better?
Foursomes is difficult anyway, and it was kind of misty and foggy and cool when they started off on Friday morning. No one could see 4-0 for either side. You know, it might be 2.5, 1.5, or all square, or it would be competitive. But actually, to get beaten in all four foursomes matches was, like I said before, I used the word, everyone was shocked. We were shocked. I think the Americans were shocked. They could never have seen that. They got off to a tremendous start, and of course, it built the crowd up. They got behind them.
We came back Friday afternoon, four balls. We beat the USA 3-1 in that particular session. Darren Clark had to do something, didn't he?
Well, Darren Clark found, I think, a pairing he didn't have in mind at all, Rory and Thomas Peters. That I think that was born out of I think the plans got thrown out the window after the 4-0 drubbing in the morning, and he found the Peters combination with Rory McIlroy, and they proved to be unbeatable.
There were wins for Rose and Stenson, who got the better of Spieth and Reed, 5-4. Garcia and Cabrera Bello paired together for the first time, got the better of Holmes and Moore, 3-2. Snedeker and Koepka, though, did manage to grab a point for the Americans, beating Kiemer and Willett, 5-4, before Rory McIlroy and Thomas Peters, of course, teamed up to beat Dustin Johnson and Matt Kuchar, 3-2. Bob, obviously the Americans were brilliant on Friday morning. Were you lot a little complacent going into the Friday afternoon four balls?
Well, I don't think we were complacent. I mean, you realize, but we were comfortable. And, you're not supposed to be comfortable when you're playing in the Ryder Cup. But when you win 4-0, getting back to Rob Lee's point that, twosome of Rory McIlroy and Thomas Peters came about because of one single shot. Andy Sullivan was playing magnificent golf. He was going to be Rory McIlroy's partner. It all looked good. And then when it came to the 17th hole, a little par three with water, crucial situation, and Andy Sullivan's ball finds the water, and that led to the pairing of Peters and McIlroy. And I can honestly say that it looks like that'll be a pairing for a long, long time. Rory McIlroy in the press conference, he said Thomas Peters is going to be my partner for the next 20 years.
Well, McIlroy and Peters, of course, partnered up again on Saturday morning. They got the better of Fowler and Mickelson, 4-2. There was a win for Snedeker and Koepka against Stenson and Fitzpatrick. Rose and Wood beat Walker and Zach Johnson, 1-up. Garcia and Cabrera Bello against Reed and Spieth, all square. It meant, Rob, that the Saturday morning went to the Europeans 2.5 to 1.5. And we had momentum then, didn't we?
Well, we got a late gift, didn't we? Of all the pairings that America put out, Reed and Spieth, they capitulated at the end, and we scraped a half somehow. Our Spanish boys did a great job to make it 2.5, 1.5. We absolutely had momentum going into the afternoon four balls. And bear in mind that we won the Friday four balls 3-1. Our pecker was up.
Bob, were you concerned about the momentum that the Europeans had?
It started to look like everything was going to evaporate completely from that 4-0 lead. And there certainly was apprehension, not only amongst the fans, but amongst the United States team and their 101 assistant captains that they had in play. So it was pretty amazing. I mean, Davis Love, he has so many people talking to him. When he handed in his pairing Saturday night for the Sunday singles, he got it there just under the line and then went in the media room and said, sorry, I'm late. I had so many people talking to me. So it was the huge committee that we formed that were making the decisions for the Sunday singles. Ultimately, they certainly got it right.
How about the vibe, Bob? How about the vibe with the crowds? Because obviously, post the Ryder Cup, there have been quite a few comments about how the fans were behaving. What was it like for you there?
Well, there were occasions where I really was not proud to be an American. It's become common practice. you know, one side hits a poor shot and you're playing on a foreign soil for the crowd to be happy about that poor shot, I can live with that. Where it went over the line here this week is prior to a player hitting a shot while he was addressing the ball, getting ready to swing, even in his backswing, people in the crowd yelling things and affecting the outcome. I don't think we can continue to go down that road. That's just not what golf is about. That's just not what the Ryder Cup was intended to be about. And I don't like that aspect. And it really has no place in golf trying to distract a player as he's actually hitting his shot.
Of course, it was only after the Saturday morning foursomes, Rob, that Europe managed to play and blood all of their players in the 2016 Ryder Cup. On reflection, do you think that was the wrong thing to do?
I think every captain calls it as he and his team see it. You know, they've all got talking heads around them, Davis Love III and Darren Clark, experienced people, Ryder Cup people, that will give their opinion on what they should or shouldn't do. So I guess Team Europe came up with the strategy that you wouldn't play everybody on the first day. I think it's a great thing to play everybody on the first day. Whether you lose or whether you win, you're invested and you're playing. Because for a player who's hanging around on Friday doing nothing, do I go out and play nine holes? And I spoke to David Howell about this. He's been in that position. Do I go out and support the boys? Do I go and do some putting? It's basically the entire amount of daylight you've got to kill in some way and keep yourself going for when you might get out on the Saturday. It's a difficult position to be in. You'd much rather know that you're either playing in the morning, doesn't matter if you play once or twice, or you're playing in the afternoon, but you can focus on that on the Friday.
Of course, Bob, the Americans always play all of their team on day one. Do you think that was a factor this time around?
This was my 16th Ryder Cup, so I have a feel for what transpires, and it quite simply comes down to this. If you don't play all of your players on Friday and you lose, boy, you made a bad mistake not playing all of your players. If you don't play all your players and you end up winning, see, that was a smart thing.
At the end of the Friday, the USA led 5-3 at halftime, so to speak. After the Saturday morning foursomes, the USA led 6.5, 5.5. We talked about momentum there. We'd seen some good performances, Rob, from the Spaniards as well. Garcia, Cabrera, Bale played together on the Friday and indeed the Saturday. You mentioned that half against Reed and Spieth on the Saturday morning foursomes. Were you surprised that they didn't play together previously and indeed later on the Saturday?
You know, when you're looking at the first morning, I think there was a sense of trying to protect the rookies a little bit, particularly in foursomes. You want experience and you want people to know. To go out for your first ever Ryder Cup in a foursomes match as a rookie, that's pretty difficult. It's pretty tough. So I think there was a sense of protecting them slightly. But, you know, in the end, you've got to trust your players. You've got 12 players that have made it through, whether you've picked them or they qualified. You've got to trust that they can do a job for you. So Bob's quite right. Hindsight, you know, armchair captains, very easy to do, but I do believe, honestly do believe, in playing everybody on Friday.
Saturday afternoon, the four balls went the way of the United States 3-1. There was a sole success for the Europeans in the form of McIlroy and Peters, who beat Koepka and Dustin Johnson. Holmes and Moore got the better of Danny Willett and Lee Westwood, who was back in the firing line. Mickelson and Kuchar got the better of Kaimer and Garcia, 2-1. And, of course, Rose and Stenson were beaten 2-1 by Reed and Spieth in a match that could have gone, Rob, either way.
Well, the Americans reversed the fantastic comeback on Friday afternoon that the Europeans, on the back of a 4-0 drubbing, they came back 3-1 in the four balls. When they had that momentum after the Saturday foursomes in the morning, that was when they had to put the pedal down and find something. And at least half, at the worst, that four-ball session on Saturday afternoon. That could have gone either way. And I go back to the Willett-Westwood combination. We talked about Lee's missed short putt at the 18th. But before that, they both made four at the 17th. Four ball, better ball, bogey at 17 when the match was all square. They par that. They win the match. That's a two-point deficit made up in one fell swoop. I know it's harsh. You criticise players at the end, and it's difficult, the pressure and away fixture, but it's fine margins in a Ryder Cup, and you have your moments. You've got to come out on top in those moments.
Bob, obviously, from a European point of view, we focus on our players, and we've talked about Willett and Westwood in that particular match, but I guess we've got to give some credit to Holmes and Moore, who took their opportunity.
No, there's no doubt about that. You know, we come back to that scenario with Lee Westwood in a position to justify being the captain's pick. But many make the argument that Danny Willett had a putt of, you know, maybe 10 feet, maybe 11 feet. The suggestion was that Danny Willett, although, see, he's playing in his first Ryder Cup, the pressure was intense, but it should have been suggested to Lee Westwood, why don't you go putt first, knock that birdie in, you know, I got you back, even if you miss, I'm going to make mine. They didn't use that tactic, and when two players have very makeable putts, you let the player with the easiest one go first, and it has a tendency to take pressure up that player. This strategy wasn't utilized. And Rob, what do you think about that? Should Willett have putted first?
I actually thought at the time, you know, Lee's looking at that putt thinking, I've just made bogey the previous hole. Missed a putt I could have holed. I think Westwood should have gone first. Yeah, I do think that. He could have then hit the putt with a little nagging feeling in the back of his mind. You know, even if I miss this one, my partner can bail me. You know, I think that was an easier situation for him than actually now I'm the guy that has to hold this. You know, strengths and weaknesses in every single player, and that's probably not Lee's strong suit.
Given the momentum and the twos and fros over the course of the previous day and a half, Bob, do you think that the Saturday afternoon four-ball session was really the session that America won the Ryder Cup?
I can't pin it on that session only because the opening session when the United States won 4-0 is the session that, you know, looking back at it, was ultimately the session that really caused the doom of the European side.
You know, the Europeans actually almost got it back to 8-all going into the singles. They could have done, got it back to 8-all, and if they had done that on away soil, that would have been an unbelievable performance to claw back the 4-0 deficit from the Friday morning foursomes. They almost did it. In the end, as it swung the other way in the afternoon fourballs on Saturday, it wasn't to be.
Well, it was 9.5, 6.5 after the Saturday afternoon fourballs. I mean, that's, Bob, almost insurmountable. You don't come back. I know we talk about the miracle of Medina, but you don't generally come back from 3 down heading into the singles.
Well, 3-up lead is just so huge. Yes, it's happened before at Medina, also at Brookline. You know, the United States was 4 down under Ben Crenshaw, and they came back and won. But those are situations that very rarely happen. But, you know, the first couple of matches on paper, it wasn't a big stretch of imagination to say, hey, wait a minute, you know, Rory McIlroy could win his match, Stenson could win his match, Rose could definitely win his match, and then we would have a new ball game after just 3 matches. But so much of that was put on the shoulders of Rory McIlroy to try and deliver, and you would think, even though Patrick Reed played unbelievable golf both on Friday and Saturday, now he's going to go up against the best player in the world on Sunday under a intense spotlight. Can he perform? You know, when you look at Patrick Reed, he's developing into this Ryder Cup legend, but he's played in 13 majors, and he's never even had a top 10 finish. So suddenly, Patrick Reed plays way better in Ryder Cup. Maybe he learned from watching Ian Poulter, but certainly Patrick Reed holding off Rory McIlroy, it almost seemed like the cause is lost and the United States is going to go on to victory.
Well, Reed, of course, got the better of McIlroy 1-up. Stenson beat Spieth 3-2. Peters beat Holmes 3-2. Fowler got the better of Justin Rose 1-up. Cabrera Bayo defeated Jimmy Walker 3-2. Bob talked about the makeup of the Sunday singles from a European point of view and reducing that deficit, Rob. And when you have all your form players going out, playing well, McIlroy, Stenson, Peters, Cabrera, Bayo and co, there was a situation where potentially we could have drawn level. They played well, but as Bob points out, that heavyweight clash with two sluggers, punch after punch, Reed and McIlroy matching each other up. If McIlroy had have won, might it have been different? I don't know.
You know what? You know what I've noticed? We've won the last 3 Ryder Cups, and obviously the Europeans are my team. When it's your team, you don't notice how well they're putting. But when it's not your team, when you're watching the opposition beat you, all of a sudden you notice how well the Americans putted yesterday. And they were on the greens. The putts that Phil made, that Snedeker made, Kuchar, unbelievable putts were holed. But the match, Bob, the really critical match could have been right in the middle. And that it was there on purpose from both captains. Mickelson taking on Garcia. That could have been the new pivot point if we'd have got the start we wanted. I mean, for Mickelson to make 10 birdies and only get a half out of the match, that was the match of the whole match for me, if you like.
Bob, that game was unbelievable, wasn't it? Mickelson and Garcia, I think they both would have carded 63s. A better ball would have been a 58. It was tremendous to watch.
It certainly was every bit of that. And, you know, the amazing thing about that match, I really, been good friends with Sergio Garcia for a long time, and certainly have been around Phil Mickelson so much. Sergio Garcia came out of the mass interview room first, and I had an opportunity to chat with him, and I said, I can't believe you could play that well and not win. He said, Bob, you know, it was not only that I played that well, it was the monster putts that Phil Mickelson was making, one even being 50 feet away. In match play, if you start making 50-footers and 30-footers and 20-footers, you just get the sense that, wow, I can't win this match. Sergio Garcia played as well as he could possibly play under those circumstances. And then when Phil Mickelson came out of the mass interview room, I was standing there, and I guarantee you, I have never been hugged any tighter. I couldn't believe what was transpiring. Phil was so delighted about the outcome that he put this bear hug on me, and I said, what the heck is going on here? But it was just an indication of how thrilled Phil was, not only because the United States won, but because of the show that he put on at 46 years old against the best of Sergio Garcia. I mean, that was a match that'll be talked about for years to come.
The remaining matches went as follows. Snedeker beat Sullivan, Dustin Johnson beat Wood, Koepka beat Willett, Keimer got the better of Kuchar, and of course Zach Johnson defeated Fitzpatrick. The one score that I missed out there was the clincher. Rob, it was Moore beating Westwood, which eventually handed the cup to the Americans.
Well, yeah, Ryan Moore, who got in last knockings really because of his performance at the Tour Championship, just losing out to Rory McIlroy when Rory won the FedEx Cup. An incredible few days for a fella that didn't know he was in the Ryder Cup until the eve of it, until almost the Sunday night. And that's when he found out he was playing. So very impressive performance from Ryan Moore. Kind of a lone is a wrong word, but he's an individual on the PGA Tour. And I think he took to the team camaraderie, which seemed to be way and above what it had been in the past. The Americans had really put a lot of effort into making sure that the behind-the-scenes situation in the team room, at least that's what Captain Love said, was stellar, and it certainly proved to be a benefit this time.
And one note of irony, Ryan Moore, I'm talking about President's Cup teams and Ryder Cup teams, he was fitted 10 times for the clothing that he would have to wear. This time, he was not fitted, and this is the time that he got picked, and it must have been destiny, because Ryan Moore made the winning putt, or deciding putt, and as you guys well know, the biggest race in Europe, the ARC, the winning jockey, his name was Ryan Moore. That was a good day on Sunday to be named Ryan Moore.
Well, of course, Lee Westwood had his opportunities to win that game against Ryan Moore, 2 up with 3 to play. But unfortunately, from a European point of view, it was Moore that went on to win. There was so much red on the board at that stage. The USA eventually went on to complete a 17-11 victory over Europe. Time to get some reaction to the 41st Ryder Cup, starting with the victorious Davis Love, who was proud of how well his players united as a team.
You know, this team had to come together, and, we lost Arnold Palmer on Sunday. That was tragic for the golf. It was a blow to our team, obviously, to start off the week. And so many crazy things have happened, but we've been criticized for 8 or 10 years for not coming together. And everybody that played on the team or didn't play on the team showed that we had a lot of heart and we can pull together. And, you know, I think that's one of the reasons that, I was put in this position is because everybody felt like we could all get together and trust around this plan. And I'm humbled that they put me in this position, and everything that's happened has just been very, very special to these 12 and then 6 captains.
The Americans, Rob, in the past have been criticised for their lack of togetherness, but they put so much preparation into this particular set of matches. They did get it right. I guess they've looked at what the Europeans have done over the years and copied us, mirrored us, maybe added one or two things in as well.
Well, look, what the Europeans do, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. We always go into a Ryder Cup behind the Americans in the world rankings. The togetherness part is much more natural for the Europeans. We just hang out more than the Americans do. Quite often in America, it's back to your hotel room, tray outside the door, and the HBO movie at 8 o'clock. That's life on the American tour. It's not quite like that in the European tour. So we don't have to worry as much about the will our guys come together. That's what the Americans have been criticised. And that's why Davis Love addressed that. So not only has he got them more invested in each other, he's also realised that, you know, having a vice captain, then bringing him on as captain, having that boot room mentality that we've had in Europe, you spend time in the background, then you get your captaincy, and then so on and so forth. So the next new guy might be a vice captain for a couple of times, then he might get a go at the captaincy. So you keep that whole thing rolling on. The Europeans done that for some time now, and the Americans have now realised that's the way forward. The task force, they brought a lot of people in, Tiger Woods and what have you. That's the way they're going forward. They're taking this seriously. This wasn't done by luck by the Americans. This was done because they prepared much better. They changed their mentality over the whole thing. And they intend, by the way, to keep it going. So now the race is on for the Europeans to win it back in France, which is great for the tournament.
So how did Davis Love do what so many of his predecessors have failed to do? And that's create a united American team. Here's the view of Jordan Spieth.
I think it was just a bit more relaxed. We just had a little more confidence in each other. We all, you know, walked through the team room telling each other how good they were, just believing in each other and making sure that we made that known to them. You just kind of stepped onto the first tee feeling like you weren't in uncharted territory, that you were supposed to be there and you were supposed to execute in that position. You know, that was the difference for me, at least. I can't speak for everybody, but I got on the first tee and just felt like I was going to make birdies that day. And for 2 years ago, I felt that, hey, this is a grind. This is a new experience. So maybe that's a little bit of just experience in it, but I think it was also the team that we have. And it really is something that we're going to enjoy for the next couple of years as we get ready to try and defend it. And I'm already talking about that because I love this week so much. And we're looking forward to going to Paris and trying to win one over there.
Bob, Rob mentioned Tiger Woods prior to us hearing from Jordan Spieth. What sort of influence do you think he had on the American team?
I don't think he had nearly the influence that he's probably going to get credit for. I spoke to Tiger after the press conference and got the sense from him that he wanted to be there. He certainly wanted the United States to win. But he said there was nothing I did that had any effect whatsoever. You know, the name of Tiger Woods, his accomplishments, certainly was a nice touch. And Tiger has been out of the spotlight for a little while. He offered to be, a vice captain back into that limelight that he was so accustomed to. But there was one thing that we haven't mentioned, and I don't know the full extent of the magnitude of the effect that was felt by the European side. You heard Davis Love tell us that it was a tough blow losing Arnold Palmer. Well, I think that blow was equally tough on the European side, losing Arnold Palmer. Arnold Palmer wasn't just American golf. He was world golf. And I know that every player on that European side had equal respect for Arnold Palmer that the players had on the United States side. But with Danny Willett's brother writing a story that basically was tongue-in-cheek and was misconstrued terribly on this side, and it kind of threw a little curveball at Darren Clark. Danny Willett didn't play in that opening session. They were trying to protect him. And I think Danny Willett, the Masters champion, didn't get a fair shake in his first Ryder Cup because of circumstances beyond his control.
Well, just speaking of the crowd, it was interesting to hear from Rory McIlroy, who perhaps suggested that his success was marred by some comments made by the partisan crowd, which the Ulsterman felt went too far.
Oh, yeah, someone just said a few derogatory things I thought was over the line and tried to get him removed. I'm not sure if he was removed or not, but these things happen. It's golf at the end of the day, and, you try to keep the utmost respect for who you're playing and for who you're supporting. But that particular guy, this is obviously in the very, very, very small minority, just took it a bit too far.
That was Rory speaking after Rory and Thomas Peters' success over Koepka and Dustin Johnson on Saturday afternoon. Did the fans overstep the mark, Rob?
Look, you can't have it always. You want 50,000 people coming through the gate. They can drink beer and have a great day. You want the fans to come and have a fantastic day and enjoy themselves. That's great. Some people are going to overstep the mark. But all in all, you got 50,000 people for a lot of the time there. It was unbelievable. The raucous noise when the putt was held was bedlam. And then it would just go, woof, silent like that for the next guy to hit a shot. Because you've not only got golf fans there, you've got event fans. And you've also got the Bubba Booey people that I don't know why that's, or pepperoni pizza, why that's fun to shout that out. So you are going to get a few of those. We've got to take that on board. General terms, you've got 50,000 people having a great time, making the Ryder Cup a fantastic event. Don't let the few spoil it for the many.
One player who was obviously inspired by the supporters was Patrick Reed, who explains here what the Ryder Cup means to him.
For me, mainly, it's, you know, anytime I get to wear red, white, and blue, it means so much to me. And anytime I can represent my country, it's just amazing. You know, it gives me goosebumps every time. And then having my first team event actually finally at home, it was just amazing to be, you know, in front of all of our fans, have them all cheering our names, and, you know, to go out there and play the way I did this week, I don't even know really what to say.
Patrick obviously really got the vibe, and he, like Poulter, fed off the crowd, and he's quite right. And I don't mind anybody expressing himself. He was doing it, Rory was doing it. All the guys, when they had the moment, were giving it to the crowd, either from the opposition or from the home side. But what I really did like was when there was someone shouting something inappropriate or at an inappropriate time, the rest of the crowd all turned on him. It was amazing. The crowd just say, hey, and they were all just giving it to him, and the American players were playing their part. It wasn't like in Brookline where you sensed the crowd were almost being incited a little bit. This time, the American players were beyond reproach, and they were telling the crowd, "Hey, come on, you know." And the crowd themselves policed it. It was impressive.
You take 50,000 people and you try and distribute them over four matches. You have huge, huge crowds. But guess what? I spoke with Thomas LeVay about what's going to transpire at the next Ryder Cup in France, and the projection right now is tickets for 65, maybe 70,000 fans. We had 50,000 here, and it seemed huge. I mean, 70,000 is going to be absolutely mind-blowing.
Let's get a European perspective and hear from Captain Darren Clark, who gave this reaction when asked if, on reflection, he'd have done anything different.
No, I wouldn't. I've spoken to this already, but to my vice-captains, and we were very comfortable with all the decisions we made. And, you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing. But even with that, we wouldn't have made any decisions. So, you know, I think Ryder Cups, as you've seen with the quality of the golf, it's a putt lipped in here or a putt hold outside your opponent there makes all the difference. When you're talking about golf of this standard, that makes the difference. And unfortunately for us this year, we didn't quite hold them, and the Americans did.
Of course, we're always guilty of picking the bones out of defeats and suggesting things could have been done differently. Rob, wild card, regrets, potentially underperforming rookies. I don't know. Did Darren do anything wrong, really?
Look, you've got two teams with 12 fantastic golfers teeing off against each other. They teed off on Friday. The Americans won it on Sunday. If you started it today, in 3 days' time, you might get a different result. That's what it's like. So I don't think there needs to be a post-mortem. I think the Americans were due a win. We've won the last three. We probably shouldn't have won Medina. We probably shouldn't have won at Celtic Manor, but we did. We found a way to get it over the line. Eventually, the Americans were going to find a way to get it done. And, you know, you have to turn around and say, not criticise Darren Clark, you have to turn around and say congratulations to Davis Love and his men.
Bob, one or two European golf fans are sort of beating themselves up about the result and wished potentially that maybe Russell Knox had have played and maybe Luke Donald. I don't know. When you saw the wild cards announced from an American point of view, did you think, not quite sure about those, it could have been done differently?
Well, you know, I think Rob put it well. I mean, Europe certainly wasn't supposed to win at Medina. Probably they shouldn't have won at Celtic Manor, but they did, and that's become the beauty of the Ryder Cup. The one thing that'll be said about this Ryder Cup, the 2016 Ryder Cup at Hazeltine, is the caliber of golf escalated to a level very rarely seen, especially under the glaring light of the pressure of Ryder Cup. It didn't seem to affect the players in their performances. I mean, birdies were everywhere. Eagles were everywhere. Patrick Reed holing out from a fairway. I don't care how you go about your pairings. I don't care how you go about your captain's picks. When shots like that go against you, instead of lip-ins, they become lip-outs. The play was absolutely fantastic at the highest level ever, and the poster child for that is certainly going to be the play of Mickelson and Sergio Garcia making 9, 10 birdies and not even being able to win a match. I mean, that is just the stuff that you can only dream about. Certainly from the United States perspective, we have to enjoy that we won, but an overall enjoyment by everyone was the level of play of both teams. It was absolutely fantastic.
I made an observation watching the matches, particularly, you know, Rory, when he first started out as a young man, made comments that the Ryder Cup was a bit of an exhibition match, but now he really gets it. I mean, I've never seen him as invested in the Ryder Cup as I have this time. I thought Rory McIlroy through the week was absolutely magnificent. The emergence of Thomas Peters and Rafa Cabrera Bello, amazing things. But Patrick Reed was the man of this Ryder Cup. He turns into something else. He feeds off the crowd. He gets that rapport going that you can't get. You cannot replicate how he felt this week, what he experienced this week in normal play, week in, week out, 72-hole stroke play. He's going to come back to a sort of emotional vacuum, Bob. I'm going to be interested to see how Patrick Reed picks up his career, because what he got there, you can't get anywhere else except a Ryder Cup in 2 years' time.
We'll have to wait and see if he can sustain that performance. But I know this much. If Tiger gets healthy and Tiger returns to the team in France, still, Patrick Reed will be looked at as the leader of the team. And to get that honor, you really have had to do something special. And over the last two Ryder Cups, you certainly have to describe the performance of Patrick Reed as special.
Well, arguably, for the continual health of the Ryder Cup, a USA victory was needed following Europe's recent dominance. Here's Rory McIlroy's view.
Obviously, we're very disappointed to lose, but at the same time, I think it keeps the Ryder Cup very interesting and gives it a great narrative going into Paris in 2 years' time.
I think, you know, we spent for so long, years and years and years, getting clubbed and gubbed by the Americans, the Brits, and then the British and the European side. We were so used to losing, but eventually we found a way to improve what we had and what we brought to the table and got ourselves into a dominant position. But I do think, I really believe what Rory said is absolutely true, that the new narrative now, it's for the next 2 years. It's the build-up to Paris, to what could be 65, 70,000 fans around a golf course that is tailor-made for a Ryder Cup. You can see all three or four holes from one position. I can't tell you how incredible the Ryder Cup is going to be in Paris. So Rory's absolutely spot on. The new narrative is the Europeans want to win it back in France on home soil with the crowds going absolutely ballistic. I can't wait already, Bob.
When you look at the big picture, a U.S. victory was the best possible thing for Ryder Cup. There was speculation from the United States Ryder Cup people that had we not tasted victory here at Hazeltine, a request was going to be made to the Pope to be our next captain because we had run out of options. But fortunately, we got the victory. Our chests are pumped up, and we're going to enjoy it for 2 years. But we know going into France, we're going to have our hands full.
Last week, we had the selections from the boys in the studio regarding top European and top USA point scorers. Rob Lee, you went for Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy, so you struck unlucky. Matt Adams went for the same pairing of DJ and Rory. Gordon Brand Jr. picked out Rory McIlroy as well. He also picked out Patrick Reed. Of course, Patrick Reed did manage the most points for the United States, 3.5. Thomas Peters, unbelievably, managed to get 4 points as a rookie. And we can hear from the Belgian now, talking about the challenge of playing singles.
You know, it's different when you're out there on your own and don't really have anybody to high-five and all that stuff, and you don't have Rory to pick you up when you're down, but I thought I did pretty well after being two down after two and fought my way back, and it wasn't tough, but I mean, plenty of birdies, and that's what you need in match play. I've loved it. It's been unbelievable. Obviously, we've had a couple issues with some of the guys, but for me, it's been nobody knows me, so it's been pretty good.
Thomas Peters, who managed to grab 4 points, not just the most for the Europeans, but the most full stop. Have you ever, Rob, seen a performance from a rookie such as that?
He's not a normal rookie, Thomas Peters, and I knew that when I saw him play for the first time a couple of years ago. He is, and I said at the time, when I watched his swing, I'm thinking of all the best swings you can think of, Rory, Adam Scott, he's got a bit of all those things in his swing. He is an incredible young player. For him to play with Darren Clark on the Thursday of the Danish event, made in Denmark, the last counting event before the picks get decided, Darren Clark put him under pressure. Let's see what you can produce when you're in the frame for a pick. And he shot 62, I believe, in the first round. It was easy peasy, 62. Birdied the last three holes to win the tournament. Forced Darren Clark to pick him. He is just that good. It doesn't surprise me that he went out there and, I mean, you don't expect a rookie to play five times. That's the thing. He got five cracks and he won four of those matches. He was absolutely astonishing. We have done one thing that are very good for the European side going forward. We have found the Spieth and Reed. We've found Rory McIlroy and Thomas Peters. I can't see that partnership getting broken up the next time we get to Paris. Peters was incredible. He is incredible. I think Rory got a kick out of watching him play as well.
Of course, yeah, Rory managed to bag 3 points himself. All 12 Americans managed to get at least a point. Four European players didn't register at all, and there were a couple of unbeaten players, one from either side, Snedeker for the Americans and Cabrera Bayo for the European side. Bob, before we let you go, just to wrap up, fantastic performance from the Americans, but you know it's going to be tough in Paris in a couple of years' time.
Well, it certainly is, and as Rob just said, I think we got to witness the formation of a duo that's going to play well and play for many years to come, McIlroy and Peters, and he's destined to be a superstar. I mean, anybody that hits it that far, you know, it was easier for Thomas Peters to adjust to playing over here. He attended college over here for a couple of years. He had one of the more outstanding collegiate coaches in the business, a gentleman by the name of Mike Small, highly regarded, and Mike Small knew that, wow, Thomas Peters is going to be a superstar of the future. And if you would ask me, who's going to win a major first? Patrick Reed, Ryder Cup hero, Thomas Peters, Ryder Cup hero. My money would be on Thomas Peters.
It's going to be fascinating to find out. There's no doubt about that. Bob, thanks for coming on the Race to Dubai show. We wish you well, and we'll speak again soon.
I'm going to go continue my celebration of that long-awaited United States victory. Job well done to Europe. Well played, Ryder Cup. Can't wait for Paris.
I'll tell you what, he'll be drunk in 2 years' time if he starts now.
Well, moving away from the Ryder Cup, in other news, Sam Walker won his second European Challenge Tour title of the season as he claimed a one-stroke victory in torrential rain at the Kazakhstan Open at Zhaozhou Golf Resort. Walker carded a 3-under-par round of 69 to finish one shot clear of overnight leader Jordan Smith, securing his second title in six events after winning the Viramaki Finnish Challenge in August. Now, ahead of two European Tour events this week, the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship and the Fiji International, we can check on the Race to Dubai standings. Rob?
Yes, the Race to Dubai standings. Danny Willett still in the number one spot. Henrik Stenson 2, Rory McIlroy 3, Rafa Cabrera-Bayo 4, Louis Oosthuizen 5, Brandon Gray 6, Chris Wood 7, Alex Noren 8, Tyrrell Hatton 9 and Lee Westwood rounds out the top 10.
The big event on the European Tour this week is the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship. A lot of prize money up for grabs. A lot of stars of stage, screen and sport rock up as well, Rob. Fantastic event for the golfing viewer, this, and some big names rocking up at St Andrews, at Carnoustie and King's Barnes.
Well, the Andy Garcias and the Hugh Grants and all the celebs that turn out to play, they once you play there in those three golf courses and play the event, you want to keep coming back. And that's what happens. They come back for more because the amateurs and the celebrities have a chance to play with a professional for 3 days on three fantastic golf courses. And if they finish in the top 20 in the pro-am bit of it, they come back and play St. Andrews on the Sunday alongside the professionals. It's the most amazing thing for an amateur. So, yeah, it's a great tournament, played on three wonderful courses. You play St. Andrews twice. Just the bonhomie and the atmosphere there for the whole week is absolutely magnificent. But it's a big chance for players who haven't got themselves inside the 110. If they're in the field, because the prize money's so good, they've got a big chance of coming from outside to keeping their card for next year. This is a wonderful week for many reasons, but that is a biggie.
It's interesting, isn't it? You mentioned that because there is an awful lot of prize money up for grabs. The pros that play obviously take it unbelievably seriously. Can it be difficult for the pros because the rounds inevitably are longer and maybe they've got to indulge their amateur partner a little bit more? How do you see it?
Well, you've got to look at some of the professionals. That some of them play with their dads, some play with their business managers, some play with people that are important to them, others play with who they're put together with that week. They all know what it is going into it, so there's no point going there and complaining. I think the players actually enjoy the format. They enjoy a little bit of a change from what is an ordinary 72-hole professional competition. This is that, of course, because it is four rounds, but you have got the pro-am element in it. And, you know, once in a while, I think it works very well. We had Beat the Pro recently at the KLM, which worked unbelievably well. One par three, an amateur teed off with three professionals all the way through the field. That's just one hole. And the pros took that on board really, really well, thought it was a great idea. And this is obviously was the precursor, but it is amateurs potentially playing four rounds up at St. Andrews, King's Barnes and Carnoustie. What could be better than that? What a thrill. It's a bucket list.
We've had some terrific champions as well. Some great stories recently. Torbjørn Olesen, of course, winning last year. Prior to that, Oliver Wilson, I mean, how many times he just missed out on a maiden European Tour win. What a win for your maiden success.
Yeah, and he had to beat Rory McIlroy to do it. You know, it's quite extraordinary that your breakthrough win is the Dunhill Links if you're Oliver Wilson. He played Ryder Cup, he played at Valhalla in 2008 without a win. He'd made enough points to make the team. And yeah, I was delighted for him to finally get back to playing like he could play and get that victory under his belt. It was really, really good.
Decent field, as always. Pick out one or two of the star names that will be teeing up at St. Andrews, Carnoustie and King's Barnes. Of course, they play St. Andrews twice, but they will play all of the three courses over the course of the 4 days.
So what's amazing, if all these people turn up, is that the field will include the likes of Brandon Grace, Louis Oosthuizen, Alex Noren, Shane Lowry, Søren Kjeldsen. Add to that the Ryder Cuppers. I mean, they must be exhausted after what they went through last week at Hazeltine. Thomas Peters is down to play. Matthew Fitzpatrick is down to play. Rafa Cabrera-Bella is down to play. Danny Willett is down to play. Martin Keimer's down to play. Lee Westwood's down to play. Harrington, vice captain's down to play. The captain, Darren Clark, is down to play. It's just unbelievable that they could go through that grilling in Hazeltine and then turn their attention to the very next week, just a few days, in a different continent, what they've got to do in Scotland. But it's great for the tournament. Big, big field and a lot of big players as well.
Who's going to win?
Well, who's going to win? That's very tricky indeed. I'm going to go for somebody who's had a lot of success in this part of the world. I'm going to go for Louis Oosthuizen.
I'm going to go with a South African as well. I'm going to swerve those Ryder Cuppers who must be mentally drained as well as physically drained for that matter. Brandon Grace is my particular fancy.
OK, any particular reason you pick Brandon?
Former champion, he's got a great record up there, loves
great
links golf
great
as
links
well.
Player.
So
yeah.
Brandon for me. Louis Fuchs, going to be an interesting battle between the two Springboks. What about our second European Tour event? Because we've got to go a little further afield for this
we've
one.
We've got to go all the way to a course that you know well, the Natodola Bay Golf Club in Fiji. It's a long, long way away from European shores. That's why there are a lot of Australians playing. In fact, so many Australians playing, I can only find two European professionals and a French European amateur. So it's a field sparkled with players from down under. And probably the winner will be a player from down under because they make up the bulk of the field.
You would have thought so. It's a great opportunity, though, for them to get a European Tour card here. They will be taking it tremendously seriously.
Yeah, but guess what? I'm not going for an Australian player, even though they are 99.9% of the field.
Who are you going for?
Vijay Singh.
Vijay Singh.
He's Fijian,
back
for
the
goodness
years.
Sake, and he's still playing some unbelievable golf. Vijay Singh is the man to beat in Fiji.
I'm going to go for Michael Sim, an Australian who's got a couple of top tens at the course, Rob.
Excellent choice. I mean, you've obviously got your reasons for picking him. He'll do well to beat Vijay Singh, that is for sure.
So that's the Fiji International and the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship. Don't forget to get your team in when it comes to the Fantasy Race to Dubai competition. Well, that's all for now. Next week, we'll review those two tournaments, plus look ahead to the British Masters supported by Sky Sports. Until then, you can stay up to date with all the latest news from the European Tour via Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram. And please get in touch via Twitter with your questions at European Tour with the hashtag ETPodcast. But for now, from Robert Lee.
Yes, goodbye and enjoy the week. Enjoy the golf. Should be fun at the Dunhill.
Bob Bobka and myself, Dan Roebuck, it's goodbye and congratulations to the United States. We'll see you next time.